Search your killer. Wonderful, isn't it? Pheromone signature left by his body. These are scent molecules. 10 years ago, one of his kind stalked and eliminated an elite special forces crew in Central America. There were two survivors. They indicated that when trapped, the creature activated a self-destruct device that destroyed enough rainforest to cover 300 city blocks. Remarkable weaponry. That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien. Iwo Jima, Cambodia, Beirut, drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh my.
Welcome to the Three Men and a Retrospective Podcast. Look at the Predator film series. Join Garrett.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
Adam.
You son of a bitch.
And Matt.
How'd you snag a ticket on this shitmobile?
As they get themselves to the analysis chopper and review each Predator film not yet covered here at Percolated Media.
So why don't you use the regular army? What do you need us for?
Because some damn fool accused you of being the best.
If you would like to hear the co-host views on the Alien vs. Predator films and Prey, check out our Percolated Media archives as the films were reviewed back in 2022.
This is getting better by the minute.
So stick around, podcast listeners.
Guess who's back?
The Percolated Media Predator Retrospective begins now.
Grab a seat. Enjoy the show. This is history.
Predator 2, released November 21st, 1990. Budget was $30 million. Box office, $57.1 million, with 30 of that being stateside. And this is directed by our old buddy, Matt, Stephen Hopkins. We haven't talked about Stephen Hopkins lately, but Matt, in a former life, you and I discussed his Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, which apparently is how he got this gig.
It sounds like it, but Fox was also, there was some groupthink, because they also got Rennie Harlan, who did Nightmare 4, to do Die Hard 2 almost precisely at the right time. So clearly they were looking for young, up-and-coming filmmakers to take over these, you know, these big sequels, which I think is warranted. I wasn't complimentary of Nightmare 5 as far as a overall story goes, but I will say I like a lot of the gothic imagery he brought to it, and I thought the ending, even though it makes no, I can't tell you what's happening at the end of that movie. I love the whole, like, M.C. Escher type of stuff he came up with. And really, those movies, unlike a lot of the other slasher entries, were showcases for directors and effects studios. And that is right in line with Predator. I could see why he'd want to do it. But I can't believe he shot this thing in 4 weeks. That blows my mind.
Well, you know what doesn't surprise me is that this fucking script was written in 3.
Oh, that does not surprise me at all.
All right, Adam, you and I, we were teenagers at this time. I know I was there opening weekend. You, I guarantee, were there opening weekend as well, but you and I wouldn't become friends for about another 3 years or so.
So this is one, I was not quite a teenager yet. Remember, I'm a little younger, but this movie came out on my birthday. On my birthday, not to give away too much online information. And I had in my bedroom growing up, and I just sent it in our group, a life-size poster of the Predator from Predator 2. And it was a weapons poster that, like, broke down all his new weapons that he was going to have in this movie. And I just thought this was freaking cool. Probably picked it up at a Sam Goody or a Tower Records. Google it. And so this was when I was just like, oh, this looks cool. And my dad took me to the movies on my 12th birthday. And he was like, well, we can go see, I think it was The Rescuers Down Under or Predator 2. What would you like to see? And after a do not tell your mother, we went and saw Predator 2 on my 12th birthday. So this is one of those absolute, like, core memory type of things for me, because I'd seen Predator, you know, of course we had the black box growing up in my house. So I'd seen that movie tons of times, but this was, I still remember, you know, this was just, yeah, this was a theater experience as a 12-year-old boy. And wow.
Absolutely. See, wow. I tried to pull that card at theaters when I went with two things. My grandfather, I could always pull that card, and B, Blockbuster, because unless you look at the box, I was so quick with sleight of hand that most of the time my parents didn't know what I was picking.
Well, after Predator had come out, see, Predator wasn't a huge success. It made a lot of its money on rentals. And plus, if you ask producers around this time, what's come out lately is this wasn't greenlit based on theatrical receipts. This was greenlit based on the response that the comic book was getting.
I've not read anything with the Predator as far as comics, including the Alien crossover. So I know next to nothing about that whole process. My thought was just any sequel that made a semblance of a profit would get a sequel. So I thought this was just almost obligatory that they would go ahead and do this, especially because you got the same writer duo coming back, Joel Silver producing, which I think explains why Danny Glover's the lead in this, among other things. But I know nothing about the comic.
Yep. You mentioned this script got written in 3 weeks. Well, the reason that they were able to do that is because they steal, and I don't mean like they borrow, they steal from a Dark Horse comic series that was done, a four-issue series, where the Predator goes to Manhattan and gets in a war with Colombian drug gangs. And yeah, that's Concrete Jungle, I want to say is what it is. Or no, that's a video game. That might have been the comic series as well. I had this comic series. I was buying any Predator comics Dark Horse was putting out, be it, obviously we've talked about, you know, I bought AVP, that series, still have it. I still have my Concrete Jungle, Predator Big Hunt, all of these. And this movie is that comic series so much that I think if they weren't kind of symbiotic for helping each other out, Dark Horse would sue the living shit out of the producers of this film.
Well, they originally had written this to take place in Manhattan and New York. Mm-hmm. But
and they saw how well that went for Jason and said, nope.
Yeah, just a year earlier. But no, it was actually the old budget restraints.
Well, that also is why Arnold did not come back.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. So Hopkins originally was thinking about Patrick Swayze for the Mike Harrigan role, which I can kind of see. They had also written that Arnold Schwarzenegger would have come back as Dutch in the Gary Busey role. Look, Arnold had his day. At this point, though, Matt, you're the Arnold guy. He had Total Recall. He had T2. He wasn't coming back to this huge jungle alien thing again, was he?
There's a strong possibility he would have if they met his salary demands, which is the most common theory as to why he didn't return for this. But he wasn't above doing sequels. He was coming back for Terminator. He did a Conan sequel, but I'm glad. This is one of those times where I'm glad Arnold didn't reprise a role, because Red Letter Media did a review talking about Predator 2, and one of them made a really good point that Predator and Alien are already pretty, you know, they're connected, not just because of the crossover. And bringing Schwarzenegger back, it would have felt too much like how they brought Ripley back for all the sequels, because really the star of these movies are the Predators themselves, whereas Alien, Ripley is the main character. I think it would have felt too much like we're trying to do that. And I like the idea of all of these Predator movies just being different locale, different characters in a new environment. I think that's the appeal above anything else.
All right. Well, in the last few years, Hopkins has come out in interviews and said Patrick Swayze wasn't the only person he had interviewed for this role. This blew my mind. Hopkins met with Steven Seagal for this, according to him. And Seagal was going to change it to a CIA psychiatrist and, of course, martial arts expert to go against a Predator. What's weird about this is Seagal wouldn't make this movie this year. Marked for Death is pretty much Predator 2 without the goddamn alien.
That the similarities are pretty apparent. But also, I don't... Seagal being in this would have... I think it would have been a disaster because of a myriad of things. I think he would have... He would have made this about him, and the Predator would have been very... He would have beat the Predator no problem. And it would have been... Look, I have thoughts on how this movie handles the Predator, but he would have basically been emasculated by Steven Seagal, and it wouldn't have... It would not have been impressive, and it wouldn't have been believable. And I think it would have kind of... I think sabotaged this character in the minds of fans. Because you already... Look at Alien as an example. Like, watching Charles Dutton fistfight an alien at the end of Alien 3 was comical enough. But if Arnold couldn't fight a Predator one-on-one in, like, a straight-up fisticuffs blows, he actually had to outsmart the Predator. it would have made him look worse in hindsight that Steven Seagal could beat up a predator, no questions asked.
It was one of those where, I mean, he was, you were making movies for a certain budget, you were getting a certain aesthetic, but I just can't. The only way I think I could at least have some fun with that, and this may be the only good thing AI is for, put Van Damme back in the suit and Seagal, and let's see what happens. Though I'd like to see today Steven Seagal go up against a predator, please. I think, you know what, that may be happening in Moscow where he lives.
Yeah, Seagal right now is having problems facing diet, let alone a predator.
He is marked for death.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. Matt and I did review this in a previous life, and after that review, my friend Brandon, who's a filmmaker, me and him got into scuffles about, he's a huge, staunch defender of this. He just loves this movie to pieces, and we'll discuss it, but my thoughts coming out of the theater back in 1990 even was, what the hell did I just see? Like, that didn't feel like a Predator movie.
In the last couple of years, there has been a big resurgence of people trying to reclaim this movie and make it, you know, raise it up in the levels that you get on that Predator hierarchy.
I think that happened because Prey came out and it got all the, you know, mm-hmm. everyone was saying this is the real, like, best sequel. And that, I think, fired up the fan base, because this one does have a cult following like a lot of these not as well regarded sequels tend to do. So I'm not surprised at the upswing, but I will give the movie this in that, before we get into it, conceptually, this does what I think a lot of sequels were not doing at the time. This one, different. It's not the same movie over. Like, it's not another, you know, Navy SEAL team being stalked by a predator. They went a completely different direction, and that was not customary at the time, especially with, you know, horror and sci-fi. It was a lot of regurgitation. And that was the whole joke about Die Hard 2. It's literally the same movie, just so much so that the movie calls it out routinely. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with where they took this, because, you know, it doesn't feel like a sequel to Predator. That's the point, because if you made the same movie again, I think a lot of people would just complain about redundancy.
I think it does, on surface, it does what people say. Do something different. Give me a sequel that's not the same thing. Do something different. Take it in a new place. Good, bad, and different. That's what we're about to start discussing. It does that.
One more thing before we do start discussing is, they didn't get Arnold back. We don't have anybody back except the guy who played the Predator, Kevin Peter Hall, is back. And that was a get. You know, I'm glad they got him back for this. And he would pass away a year later, as I mentioned last week. But the fact that we got the original Predator back is interesting. And I love interviews with him where he talks about the fact that we don't see this Predator dropped off like we saw last week. And he thinks what Kevin Peter Hall was kind of identifying with this was, the Predator that is in this movie is kind of like the Rebel. He wanted to go to L.A. just because that was like a dangerous place to go. And he really wanted, the Predator itself just wanted to go and get into trouble and pretty much just cause havoc without even telling his buddies. So I always thought that was a funny take on what this Predator actually is. Adam, good thing they got Kevin Peter Hall back, right?
They did. And yeah, that's a good point. I guess he becomes the Garrett Predator at that point. But yeah, I think getting that same person, getting that same physicality, because we're going to get different predators on out, different looks, different feels, different moves. This Predator at least feels like a continuation of that first one, even though it's a different one. So I think that is the most connected you get, is having the same person in that suit.
Well, it certainly helps, but it's also more impressive because he's playing a different predator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Both literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. So praise for that, certainly.
So we open up with the 20th Century Fox logo as we hear the predator screaming, and we cut to a jungle. So we think we're going to be staying in the jungle until we pan out and see that we're actually in Los Angeles in 1997. What? Why 1997? That's 7 years after 1990, which is when this movie is released. Adam, is it just to have that 10-year window of, oh, this takes place 10 years later?
I think it was to give it some separation. I think it was to put it technically in the future. This weird, not dystopian, but alt version of LA. I mean, good, give it some separation. I think it was a way to make it its own thing. And I mean, Rodney King, LA riots, this was a newsworthy kind of thing. So I don't have an issue with it. Like, I think setting it in that type of time frame made sense.
Yeah, that would happen 6 months after this movie was out, which is crazy to think about, that this is what this would be, not 3 years later.
And it was a powder keg. Like, L.A. was not, I mean, think of Times Square back, you know, pre-Giuliani. It was that kind of thought process for big cities in America.
That's what RoboCop was based on. That there were parts of the city in New York and even Detroit that were unlivable. And as far as how it's depicted here, it's definitely not post-apocalyptic, but they're one Kiss gang away from this being the Warriors. And yes. I like that, but I also think it feels kind of perfunctory, because outside of that, this movie does not feel futuristic in any way besides that and the Predator. So this movie has a lot going for it as far as ideas and trying to really tackle a lot of different areas. But the time frame and the, you know, the not too distant future, I think that's one of the calling cards of this movie, is that it's tremendously underdeveloped.
Yeah. No, it's also, and this may be fresh in mind because I just watched it on TV the other day and I'm ashamed of myself. It is one earthquake away from Escape from LA.
I do like the misdirect, though, with the opening of this, where it's the helicopter shot over, like, trees and shit, so it makes you trees. Think it's the jungle.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it is the jungle, dot, 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 the urban jungle.
Yeah, the urban jungle.
We're opening up in infrared as the Predator is scanning the city, and we're seeing and hearing some bullets go by, and the very first thing we see when we cut to color is an explosion, which was apropos for this type of movie. And Matt, we're in 1990, but this really feels like those old 80s action films, doesn't it?
Well, that's also one of the problems with making this in 1997 as a setting, because the fashion is right out of the 80s, the filmmaking. It's an inherent issue with these type of movies where when you're at the start of a new decade, but you're trapped by the conventions of the one you just ended. In a lot of ways, I mean, the violence in this is cranked up. I mean, the first one's pretty graphic, but this one, it's almost a Paul Verhoeven movie with the amount of blood squibs and graphic viscera, to the point where this thing had to be reset to the MPAA like 3 or 4 different times to get an R rating. But I think, unfortunately, it's an instance where it's the time-honored tradition of sometimes less is more. I think this one goes a bit too far in that regard. Look, I'm someone who I love blood and viscera as much as anybody in my trashy genre films, but I kind of feel like at times it's all this movie has going for it.
Yeah, this was the first movie to ever get an NC-17 rating when it was first submitted to the MPAA. And Hopkins does say in the commentary they did have to make some cuts here and there to get it to where it is.
Oh my God. You know what? The opening feels like Die Hard 3 when it's just panning over the city and suddenly we get an explosion. Mm-hmm. Did everything but kick in the music. Though, they do one thing that you know was a note from the studio. Give us the Predator early, give it often, and make that the focus.
Yeah, I thought a lot of Jaws when we did that series, where the first movie was all about concealing the shark, right? You got to conceal it, mostly out of necessity, as Spielberg did, and we discussed in that podcast. But in later sequels, they're like, show it and show it a lot, because people aren't in suspense anymore about what the shark looks like. That's what I feel about this Predator as well.
Yeah, and it's not a bad idea. Like, no. If you're not coming to this movie for an Arnold action movie, you're not coming for Danny Glover. You're coming for the Predator.
Well, some people did. I think maybe some people checked this out because they thought it was a Lethal Weapon sequel.
I'm telling you. I mean, he's playing fucking Murtaugh in this movie.
Including the captain who decides to show up on set.
Yeah, the captain, who's here in this scene.
You have three actors from the first Lethal Weapon in this. It's a Joel Silver production. And to your point, there are times where Danny Glover, I like him, but then they give him too many Murtaugh-isms. Like him talking to himself, like him being afraid of heights. That is as much of a gag as I'm getting too old for this shit. And I think he's good, but I can't say he's miscast. I don't like this character as the lead.
Me too.
My wife came into the room while I was watching this, and it was a scene where it was just Danny Glover and I think some of the other people, and she goes, didn't you guys already do Lethal Predator shows up? Oh. So, I mean, even just a casual viewer, it's a Lethal Weapon movie.
So we're seeing reporters just get caught in some crossfire as things are out of control. We then see a SWAT team just fall in slow motion as these Padres just celebrate what's happening. And then we have, I mean, if we haven't stamped this in the 80s already, boys, this is 1990, but Morton Downey Jr. is roaming around yelling, who's in charge, and screaming for someone to declare martial law, and bullets are just flying everywhere. Adam, I remember this guy. I remember late nights. I think you and I probably watched him once or twice back in the day, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And I understand who, like the what and the why that he's there, but I didn't like him when I was younger. I don't like him now. He is such an annoying little shit ripoff of so many other people. Didn't he show up on Piper's Pit once?
Yeah, yeah. He was in WrestleMania 5. And yeah. He also showed up in a Tales from the Crypt, too. That was actually pretty good, where he went into a haunted house.
Yes. And he played a sleazy reporter in it.
Yeah, boy, big stretch.
It doesn't have a lot of range, but I think this is one of the castings that dates this movie. And mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, I feel like Hopkins is trying to make RoboCop 2 before he's trying to make Predator 2. Because everything with the news really feels like it's trying to be that satirical type of commentary at a time where, you know, we're not too far off from Fox News. If they made this in the late 90s, it would have been Jerry Springer. Mm-hmm. In this role, because that's kind of this, what his show was the precursor to.
Hardcore, which he calls us. There was a show called Hard Copy.
Hard Copy, yeah.
Which was this tabloid TV. Mm-hmm. So it. But yeah, the RoboCop allegory is so on point. And I don't even think they're really trying to make something as good as RoboCop 2. I think we're looking at RoboCop 3.
Matt, you've mentioned RoboCop a couple times. And just for this viewing, I don't think I've ever thought of RoboCop as I watched this movie. Definitely did for this. Mm-hmm. And Adam, you mentioned it. Morton Downey Jr., they're trying to do that whole ironic news reporting like RoboCop pulled off very nicely in that original film. And it's falling flat. So here's when we meet this film's hero, Mike Harrigan. And he's joined by Maria Conchita Alonso. Guys, we reviewed her earlier this year as well in The Running Man.
I did not do this on purpose.
She shows up as Leona. And Ruben Blades, he's here as Danny. And then we see Mike do the very obvious, this isn't Arnold, but he's just as cool thing of driving and hanging outside a car as he's taking dudes out.
He also purposefully takes off his driver's side car door to hang out of it. And he also does the stupid thing of he puts bulletproof vests on the windows.
Yes.
Because apparently we'll open up this can of worms. So they're fighting Colombian drug dealers. And then there's Jamaicans as the other. Is this movie too, is it bordering on racism? Because it certainly crossed the line into caricatures, right down to them snorting coke in a couple minutes.
But we saw it in Die Hard 2.
No, I don't think it's racist, but I think this movie, I think oftentimes it's exaggerating the characters because they're trying to show that we're not too far off from the gangs taking over. But I also think at the same time, it dates the movie.
Oh, big time.
I think the caricatures, the way they do it, is what really, it would never be something you'd get away with today. People need to remember that Jamaicans don't practice voodoo. So that is Haiti, completely different country.
Yeah, it's watch Live and Let Die, people, if you want how it's supposed to be done.
It's a different stop on your Royal Caribbean cruise itinerary. But I do think they took just some of the most basic headlines out of news and decided they were going to ramp it up.
We mentioned that this takes place in 1997, straight out of the 80s. I mean, the guns aren't even advanced. Why are we being told this is the future when we're not seeing any sort of advancement whatsoever?
Anything to me is watching, I'm just going to watching Murtaugh decide that he's going to be Riggs throughout the entire course of this film.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you cast Murtaugh, but he's the renegade, recluse, anti-authority cop. Mm-hmm. They're writing him like he's Riggs.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I think they wanted Mel Gibson, and they got Danny Glover instead.
But the problem is, Danny Glover is not believable as that type of cop.
No.
Especially at his age. Yeah. Like, you know, at this point, he's what, close to 50?
I think they said he was 55 when he did this.
This feels like it was clearly written for Patrick Swayze, and they didn't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, they, you know, because Swayze, you know, is he in Point Break? He could lead an action movie. I just think Danny Glover, he's trying his best. I'm not faulting him, but I don't like what they do with this character whatsoever.
Well, he gets a shirtless scene later. The guy's working out. He's trying. I agree with you. I think he's trying hard. But when you have what you had last week, and you had those heightened characters that we had last week that we talked about, you can't go this route because you're just going to look bad. Matt, you said that this might be racist, but I always love this shit of this guy just inhaling this huge amount of cocaine and just loving every minute of it, snorting. And then we see Mike just take out some more guys as the Predator himself zooms in his infrared. So the Predator is, as Adam said, he's here and he's here often.
He's also here without a whole lot of explanation. You know, before we got a very elite unit. So I'll say his reason for being here, other than trying to do that LA is a war zone, is not only ill-defined, it's non-defined.
And there's an easy way to explain it. The Gary Busey's group, they have a spaceship and he needs to infiltrate that to get off the planet.
Mm-hmm. Would have been nice to have seen that.
Yeah, or he's hunting them because it makes no sense, and you have to heavily infer because unlike the first one where he really, he's methodical, he has a code of honor, which he has here to some degree, which we'll talk about, but I don't get the sense that he's hunting something that's actually a challenge, which I thought was how he's portrayed in the first movie. Here, he's taking these guys out like he's the Punisher.
Yeah, you're right. Last week, it just felt so, like you mentioned, methodical, and it felt like that Predator. Like, Adam, you and I are kids. Our dads are taking us hunting. That's what it kind of felt like last week. Here, you're right. I don't get that feeling here. I just feel like Kevin Peter Hall said it, I couldn't get it out of my mind. He's just here being a rebel, just kind of taking these dudes out because he can. Mm-hmm. So Mike says that he's not going to wait for some feds to give him permission, and then we see the Predator just kind of fall through some glass right in the middle of these drug lords. We cut to Mike and his team entering the building, and we see that the majority of them have been completely slaughtered except for the women and the children. So,
but another thing I'll give this movie, it's a lot like Die Hard 3, where it perfectly captures the fact that you are going to sweat and feel the perspiration like you're watching John Waters' polyester.
You know what, man? Yeah, this is a sweaty movie. You're right.
Yeah, and everybody's like sweaty and gross. You have Bill Paxton sweating through his suit jacket.
When we get in this and we think that they're going to break in and fight these guys, and they've already been completely wiped out, they're strung up, they're killed, the Predator had his day, this is when I'm like, oh shit, we're getting something a little different. And I'm kind of excited to see this level of violence and viscera, and just, this is what I want out of the Predator. You know, I do want some of this badass shit. So even though we didn't see it, we've already escalated, because we're not going one by one. We're clearing out a dozen people at a time. We're doing something different. As a kid, I thought this was awesome. As an adult, it's less so. But I'm still like, there we go. Ask my boy.
So we see another gunfight taking place as they chase a guy to the roof. Mike has him cornered. The guy spots the Predator and fires away at it. But Mike thinks he's shooting at him, so he fires as well. And the guy takes a tumble to the ground below.
But survives.
Yeah, survives.
In a movie where people are getting gutted left and right and having holes in their bodies, this is like the freaking A-Team where he falls off the building and he's totally okay.
I was expecting a mattress to just float right in front of the frame here. This causes Mike to say, damn, it's hot, as he rolls around and aims his weapon. So why didn't the Predator take him out then?
You could ask that question from credit to credit.
Mike then says that I must be losing it. And I hate characters that have this inner-outer dialogue like this. This is...
Well, they're also trying to make him John McClane in the first Die Hard.
Yeah. He tells his team to seal off the building. And then we see Mike walk in the building with Leona and Danny, and they just cannot believe the carnage that they're seeing. Ah, guys, remember when the Predator actually skinned and hung people naked like this? Danny sees the Predator walking on the roof and tries getting Mike to see it too, but they spot a body hanging from the roof, which gets pulled up, which I thought was a cool shot, actually. Hopkins doesn't let you see the whole thing, but we're seeing this body from kind of like an angle, as if you're looking up, and it's just getting pulled up. That was kind of nice.
So they keep finding new ways to film the Predator. They do a lot of low angle shots, Dutch angles, if you will.
But oh, God.
Even the way they'll introduce the Predator later on with in the alleyway, like, that's really creative how they do that. So I think this is a lot like Nightmare 5, where Hopkins clearly has some stylistic things that he can infuse this movie with, but I, much like Nightmare 5, I think the writing in this is pretty awful.
Ugh, this is a terrible script.
I do think he's trying some different stuff with his directing styles, which I appreciate. I mean, this dude also directed one of my favorite Under the Radar movies.
Don't you dare say Lost in Space.
I know what he's going to say, because I feel the same way.
Ghost in the Darkness?
Yeah, Ghost in the Darkness, yeah.
Yep, no. Completely underrated, but...
You and I saw that in theaters.
Yep, sure did. Yep. Lost in Space, of all the issues, not his fault. I think he directed it perfectly fine, but Joey, come on. So yeah, I do think that he's trying to do something different, and I do think it shows he's doing something different. Part of the problem is that first Predator movie gets so many kills and so much direction right that it's hard to do something different without aping it.
We then see Mike get the hammer pulled down on him by another king of 80s and 90s action movies. Robert Davi shows up. Have we reviewed this guy since we saw him in Bond?
Well, when we do Showgirls, we'll review
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I think he was just nearby doing blow with Joel Silver, so he decided to let him walk on set, because yes. There's no reason for him to be. We get multiple different authority figures in this film, and you didn't need that at all. So Robert Davi showing up being Robert Davi.
Phil says that Mike is making him look bad, and all he wants is a little cooperation, as he disobeyed an order to let the feds handle this whole situation. And then we're seeing the Predator witness this entire argument, as well as a helicopter which comes down.
This okay. This one, even more than the helicopter in last film, we make fun of it when we look at things like True Romance and how much of a joke they make it. It's things like this. There is not a street in downtown Los Angeles that you could land a fucking helicopter in.
I lived here 4 years and I could not find a space to park my car, let alone park a goddamn helicopter.
It's this type of shit that just makes me laugh that I'm like, man, he does get a hard-on for helicopters.
In this helicopter is yet another guy we have reviewed this year, Gary Busey, as well as a whole special unit we'll fully meet later on. Danny prevents Mike from going after Phil as we see the streets just completely littered. And guys, nothing says 1997 like Gerardo being played, right, Adam?
Oh my gosh. Wow. There's so many things that date this.
I know.
Everything that dates this movie is like having a BlackBerry, you know, for a phone in the early 2000s. It's just, you can't not see it.
Rico Suave. We cut to inside the police station as people are brought in and a completely over-tanned Bill Paxton is practicing his golf shot. Fucking Bill Paxton. They're trying so hard to make this like Aliens and they're just pulling people from that particular movie.
They're also trying to make him Riggs with the, you know, fast talking. Not just borderline chauvinist, he is an outright pig in this movie. And I love Bill Paxton, but I think they told him to lay it on thick, and it gets on my nerves pretty quick, as much as I love him. And what's really weird, you also have, you're clearly trying to make this, like, Danny Glover your unquestioned lead, but you're saddling him with, like, this supporting cast that don't really add much in the whole context of everything. Outside of one, like if you gave him just one partner that gets killed, that's more than enough reason for him to go, you know, lone gunman against the Predator. But you're saddling him with all these other people just because Bill Paxton was in Terminator and Aliens. So you had to have him get killed by a Predator to check that off as his box.
I'm surprised Lance Hendrickson isn't roaming around here.
Well, he'd get his in about 15 years with AVP.
Yeah, that's true.
It's as much as anything else, because this was so early. Like, I almost feel like he's pulling off Tim Robbins from Bull Durham.
Nice.
It's just that kind of, but yeah, this is where, and they ape some shit really bad later on. But I mean, come on, Miss Alonso coming in here, she's clearly Vasquez.
Oh, God,
you know, in this film. So getting in Paxton, I mean, and look, part of the reason Predator and then this movie got done is because Fox couldn't get their shit together with the Alien franchise.
Yeah, Alien 3 was supposed to come out this year, too, yeah.
Yeah, so it makes sense that they're like, you know, look, do this, you know, shit happens in Hollywood. But yeah, he's a douche. He's Bill Paxton. He is what we got from 80s, 90s Bill Paxton in every fucking movie until probably, what, Twister. Titanic. So this is what you get.
We're hearing that someone named Keys will be investigating what's going on and Mike is being called on to cooperate. I love that we're hearing this term that we've heard in all these 80s action movies. My hands are tied.
This movie's chock full of cop cliches, but they're never done with a wink and a nod.
No.
And more importantly, this scene with how crammed the police station is straight out of RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
There's prostitutes. There's gang members. There's people fighting cops. It's so ridiculous. But the movie never stops to actually really have fun.
That's a good point. Everything's taken so serious in this one. And last week, yeah, it was serious, but there was a hint of fun up there. You know, when we were talking about those caricatures that were on screen. Here, there's none of that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it needs that wink and a nod, and it decides to lose that.
Yeah, it exchanges it to be mean, because this is a mean-spirited film.
Yeah, this is very much like RoboCop 2, where it's got a mean streak. And unlike the first one, which does a purposeful misdirect, where it starts out much more bombastic and comedic, and then it slowly starts to dissipate, this one has the opposite problem to a degree, where it starts out deathly serious, and then in the last 20, 30 minutes, they start girl barring jokes to add some levity.
Keys makes an appearance saying that they have a large number of operatives who have a job to do, and Mike says that cooperation is his middle name. Jerry, the Bill Paxton character, he tries talking to Mike, but he's hearing none of it, as Danny gives Mike the lowdown of what they're dealing with. Danny also suggests giving this Predator a job and putting him on the payroll. Ruben Blades, another fucking character actor that there's littering this cast with people that, if you're going to make Danny Glover the lead, why are all these characters around him?
Well, that's right. Everybody that's in this, they're not characters, they are caricatures. Mm-hmm. Everyone.
And none of them last past an hour.
Yeah, we kill everybody down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Or incapacitate them because they don't kill off, what's her name?
Because they need to be pregnant in order to not be killed.
Yeah, but they write her out of the movie.
Never comes back. Mike says that he thought Jerry Lambert was here to fix the air conditioner. We then cut to Jerry hitting on Leona, who does the other 80s thing and grabs his balls while threatening him.
Yeah, what you been feeding this thing, blods?
Oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Mike tells Jerry that until now, it's all been fun and games, but now it's a war zone they're dealing with. He also says that he doesn't like showboats and the team comes first. Mike says, welcome to the war, as we cut to a massive sex scene that blew my 13-year-old mind away when I saw this in theaters.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get full frontal. And yeah. It's even made more hilarious by the transition because you hear the moaning.
Yes.
Because it's a full shot of the city that it cuts to full frontal. And you're like, oh, that's where that sound is coming from. There are a couple of transitions in this movie that I think are hysterical and well executed. But the movie is not tonally tongue-in-cheek throughout. So they feel really out of place.
This place is invaded by a Jamaican gang who hang the girl and guy up and says that he can pay them to go away.
I do love how they hang him like the Predator hangs people.
I do too. Yeah, and that's why they make the correlation, right? Because they're thinking the gang is actually doing these ritual killings, but it's the Predator.
But this is so freaking outlandish that they might as well say Kali Ma.
It's fucking cartoonish.
As they take his heart out. Like, how is it that a Bond movie with literally Baron Samedi is a more authentic and somewhat threatening version of voodoo than a goddamn Predator sequel?
But the leader says that they're history and shit happens. Just as he puts blood on this guy for some sort of sacrifice, the Predator enters the building and takes all of them out. And this was shit I completely gobbled up as a kid. And Adam, remember the trailer? It had this net catching this guy against the wall. That was straight out of the trailer.
It absolutely was. I think that thing was awesome. It which is funny because anybody remember Alien versus Predator? We used the same freaking net.
Yep.
So yeah, I dug this quite a bit, this whole breaking through. Again, we've now seen the Predator like three times, and we're only in the first 25 minutes of this film. We hadn't gotten Jack or Squat last movie, and that's not a criticism. It's just, it's different. They know what this thing needs.
Yep.
And you talk about the nudity scene. Yeah, seeing this in a movie theater, there was two things that kind of like, I will still remember. The first time I'm watching, I think it was Dream Warriors and the nurse.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Because I'm watching that with my dad and uncle. And then this one. So Terry Weigel, she stayed on the saved list a lot of time when she moved over to adult.
And then we have this shot of this guy just getting shot in infrared POV. Glass is being taken out. And we have the spear in action. And one thing I do like about this movie is they did up the Predator gadgets in this. We're seeing a lot more things, you know, the spear, the net. Adam, this was probably stuff you ate up as a teenager, right? Or as a preteen.
This was what I wanted. And the poster that I had was focused on the weapons. Like the Predator was standing there and it did a breakdown of what each weapon was and what it did. So this movie seems to be about, hey, you know, you saw the last one, you saw his camouflage. And then, you know, he basically breaks it down and they fight mano a mano. This one, he's not going to lose his weapons and fight fist to fist. This is look at what cool ass weapons we can invent for a sequel. And I think that's how you plus it. That's how you go to the next level. So yeah, seeing this telescoping spear, seeing this net, seeing the, can we call it the glaive? Because he might as well be Kroll when he pulls out his freaking disc. I love this shit. As a 12-year-old boy, I love this shit. And as a 40-year-old man, I alien weapons, Predator weapons is fucking cool.
It's kind of one of the only things the movie has going for is how they expand upon the Predator technology. But it's more blunt force than anything else. Like, there's never, outside of one really contrived sequence that they steal from Aliens later on, you never see the Predator really outsmart anybody, which he kind of has to do in the first one with the mind or the voice mimicking, which in this movie they just play as a joke.
Yeah.
You know, outside of just him having, like, he went to Q Branch before he landed because he's got all this, like, Bond shit. But it's also the problem, like, he feels so overpowered in this compared to everyone else that it makes it even worse that he gets beaten at the end so haphazardly.
We cut to more hard copy reporters outside the building as Jerry is taking the Shane Black mantle of telling just bad, gross jokes. Jerry then pulls down Downey Jr. as Mike and his team, they go in. They find a hung skin body, and they're trying to deduce how this Jamaican gang headed by King Willie was taken out. King Willie. Fuck. So cartoonish.
I guess Lord Humongous was already taken. That's what this is. Like, if you were going to go this ridiculous, you might as well have this be like the first Mad Max, where society, if you tilt it the wrong way, everything collapses.
Yep. They find the girl, who, like Anna last week, is in complete shock, saying that the devil came for them, and Mike says this is the work of their friend from the armory. They also find a spear tip that was left behind. Predator's getting kind of sloppy here, isn't he, Adam? He's leaving shit behind.
This is the part where I'm like, you wouldn't do this. He wouldn't do this.
No.
Or she. I understand you need it for the plot, but I can't see that he would ever retreat back to where he's going and go, oops, I forgot that tip. No big deal.
This is why Batman has detective vision as a thing.
This is when Keyes comes in and says that Mike and his big nose are intruding on his business.
This is also a problem where, to quote Cool Hand Luke, what we have here is a failure to communicate. There's no good reason why these two can't just sit down and talk about cooperating. They have to be confrontational because it's a cop cliche.
Yep.
Downey's yelling about his rights as Keyes tells Mike to get the hell out of there. Mike's also told that Keyes is the last person you want to fuck with. Mike tells Jerry to go out on surveillance and then tells Danny to take a look at that room, but stay out of sight. And then we see Mike watching surveillance video of Keyes and where he's going as Jerry says that luck is his specialty and it starts hitting on every chick in the bar. And this whole thing of Mike watching the surveillance, this is when Anna was going to be in this film, but they cut her out for some reason.
Yeah, it's just funny because she still has a credit.
Yeah, she still has a credit.
Because she has a photo like on a monitor. Mm-hmm. But this also, it sets up the alien scene we get later on.
Mm-hmm. It does. And Matt, you mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to mention it now. This movie is about as sweaty as Top Gun, which we reviewed a couple years ago, isn't it?
It is. Like, this and Die Hard with a Vengeance will make you not want to side.
Yes, but at least John McClane had the smarts to freaking, you know, take his jacket off. Why are we wearing a leisure suit when it's 111 degrees?
Oh, God. Yeah, the fashion in this movie, the oversized suits and, you know, Danny Glover's pants look like he should be dancing next to MC Hammer.
It is so hot and sweaty, you wouldn't need thermal vision. It's just constant red. Yeah.
We cut to Danny going back in the building, and as he walks inside, he goes after the spear tip. He goes and grabs it, and he hears Mike say, "Danny boy," and falls. He's grabbed by the Predator. As he pulls a gun, Danny is completely taken out.
See, now the Predator is just operating like Jason Voorhees, where it's like anyone in his vicinity he will take out. Like, he's not hunting. This movie treats him all too often like just another slasher villain.
I was just thinking Jason Voorhees. He just feels like Jason in that.
Yeah, he's not hunting specifically for even the amount of people that he kills, but the look at that versus the percentage of trophies that he actually used. It doesn't make sense. You know, why did he show up, interrupt a man's just happy date with his girlfriend to slaughter all the Jamaicans? Like, we don't know why he's doing what he's doing other than Predator show up and kill people in L.A. He's going to kill this gang. He's going to kill that gang. There's no rhyme or reason.
We're seeing that Harrigan has quite the police record, and his commanding officer's defense isn't enough, and Mike is told to not infringe upon anything that Keyes does. How many times have we heard this speech, this fucking movie? It's been at least three times at this point.
Yeah, three times in this movie's very redundant with how it gives you information.
It's crazy. You're right.
In every
this
Lethal Weapon
is
movie.
Just awful.
To answer your question, we've heard it three times in this movie, and we hear it twice in every Lethal Weapon movie.
That's true.
Yeah, all they have to do is talk about property damage.
Yeah, go back in the archives. Check that out, people. Mike then says whoever killed Danny is going to pay, and it'll be him who finishes it. Harrigan then goes after Keyes and warns him to stay the fuck out of his way, and Keyes says to just let him go. We cut to another Morton Downey Jr. report about how Mike is the best officer on the force, so him being suspended doesn't make any sense. Jerry and Leona, they talk about the fact that Keyes isn't setting things up to look for drug dealers. This is bigger than that. Mike says that he and King Willie seem to have the same problem, so Mike sets up a meeting with him.
Yeah, so apparently now you if you have a contact on the cops, you can talk to drug dealers. Like, he's not even an informant.
I know. How does this happen? Mike is hearing that Danny was boned like a fish as Jerry knocks some shit down. Mike then gives the doctor what Danny pulled from the building, and we're hearing that it has no weight and can cut like steel.
I liked this scene when I was little. I like it now that at least we're learning a little bit about it, you know.
Definitely.
That we're doing a metallurgic test on this to be like, there's no elements of this planet. That's cool shit.
I agree with you, but the way they got it is still sloppy as fuck.
The way we get there, the way that we have
we're hearing that this doesn't fit in anything on our periodic table. Mike then hitches a ride in a taxi to see King Willie because, you know, of course he has this all organized. He's asked.
And of course the Jamaican gang listens to West Coast rap.
and has ganja going on in the taxi.
Did everything but pull Snoop Dogg out of this car in the early 90s.
I mean, they didn't hit anybody, so Suge Knight wasn't in the car.
And he still has his head, so obviously Seagal didn't get to him yet either. Remember, Seagal sliced off the King's head and marked for death. So Mike has his meeting with King Willie, who says that the thing doing all the killing is in the spirit world on the other side, and there's no stopping what can't be stopped. He then says that this is total dread, and he sends Mike on his way, telling him to prepare himself. And then we see the Predator jump down, and let me tell you, as a 13-year-old kid, the shot of him walking on the water fucking amazed me. And you know what? Even as a guy in his 40s, it still amazes me watching this. And Hopkins on the commentary, he loves this. He's pretty proud of the fact that he pulled this scene off. It is pretty cool.
It is. I like it then. I like it now. And realizing little things, like they never fully get into it, but how water affects the cloaking device. Because the reflection of the water, you see our first full reveal of the Predator. But the cloaking is still going on and starting to short circuit. I like this. What they do, because right in the shit so quick, you should have had the Colombians killed early. Like, well, they were, but like opening up. And then you could have had the police department and King Willie, just both sides trying to figure out what's going on. Instead, we get this introduction and it's over. Like, as soon as we get King Willie, it's like that's it, you know. But he's fun. Killed it. I mean, great. I guess we saw this, you know, when we did go to Haiti and Pirates of the Caribbean. This is Calypso. It's just as bad, just with this bad accent.
It's a cool way to do like a full reveal in multiple ways. And like I said earlier, this is a great transition.
Well, I'm not sure I like how Hopkins does this, because we have a jump cut of the guy screaming and Predator carrying his head. It was cool seeing how the Predator cleans the skulls he keeps. I thought that was really awesome, but I don't know, man. Like, we have him screaming and the head still has the mouth open. So it's just so cheesy the way he does it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if this movie was more, I guess, fun, that would have played like if this was more like Jason Lives with the kills, it would have been a little bit more, I think it would have landed better. I think it's hysterical, but it's kind of out of place in the context of this movie, which up to this point has been remarkably drab and dour.
We go back to Tony Pope. I didn't realize how much Morton Downey was in this fucking movie.
Like, he's in this so much, he might as well get a featuring credit.
Yeah, I know.
We're lucky they didn't have him like working with Key somehow, that he was there to help infiltrate what was going on.
Yeah, he's at least in the background. He's talking about the skin bodies and that King Willie was also found with his head cut off and that his spinal column was torn completely out.
So theoretically, then crime should be getting better if the two gang leaders just got murdered. So society should be on the up and up very soon.
I got to agree. Put him on the payroll.
Yeah, exactly. Jerry is giving Mike the rundown on Keys as Mike watches some chicks roam around in sprinklers. And then the doctor calls and tells Mike that the ingredients of the weapon they found, and they deduce that Keys must be in a slaughterhouse. So we cut to where Danny's body is buried with a kid roaming around carrying a toy gun. The Predator spots him and the kid offers him some candy.
This is the quickest burial for anybody that's ever had to deal with it. That he's already got a plot, already got a marker. Yeah. That's quick shit.
There's a cop. Cops, it's like the express line at Disney.
We see Mike put down a picture of himself and Danny on Danny's grave as he pulls out his gun. And again, the Predator just doesn't take him out.
No. And if you want, like, I don't know, toying with your food, maybe you want. But if he would have had this opportunity with Arnold or anybody else, he wouldn't have waited. He wouldn't have played around.
Though he does leave Danny's necklace dangling. So what, he's taunting him now? Like, I didn't know Predator did this shit. But
yeah.
And we have more inner-outer dialogue going on as we cut to Jerry and Leona on a train, which must have given Adam some PTSD, given that these are the exact trains he drives.
It's been a couple of years since I've seen this movie, but I've seen it a ridiculous amount of times growing up. This is my train. It was filmed on my job. Mm-hmm. And that's, realizing this now as a grown man is odd. Not only that, but where they're, in a little bit, where they're walking around outside of the train, I drive that corridor. The mile marker that they have, I took a picture. I'm like, wait a minute, I know where this is. So these trains have been updated. We haven't used them in about 2 years, but I drove these trains. And as somebody who's just a Predator fan, this popped me so huge. Like, is a dork. Like, fuck it, this is my stuff. But I have no idea why in the living F the freaking Predator decides that he needs to crawl on top of a freaking LA subway train. I don't know why he suddenly shows up on this train.
You know why? Because it was a scene in the comic and they wanted to do that scene in this movie. That's the only reason.
Yep.
We're seeing the attempted mugging of a guy on the train, and it is kind of a comedy bit when they cut to everybody on the train just having guns. Like, we just know all these people are fucked. The train goes off kilter, leaving it in strobe, and this definitely was going for that alien vibe.
Right down to the strobe lights, yep, and the muzzle flares. This is like the only like true like horror scene in the movie, which I think it's kind of needed, but again, it just feels like the Predator is not being challenged in any way. Just because he's stacking up a higher body count doesn't mean it's a difficult hunt.
In the midst of this madness, Jerry gets into it with the Predator and loses. And I do like how he just throws a golf ball at it. It's like, fuck, I've run out of things. Let me just throw this golf ball. And this is also when we learn, guys, that a Predator won't kill you if you don't have a gun or if you're pregnant. This is a drop storyline that truly tells me that these writers had absolutely zero love for their own characters. Because not only is this storyline dropped, this fucking character is dropped. We don't see her again.
Yeah, this is one of those. I think they wanted to show, like in the first film, that he's got a code of honor somewhere, and this is how they were going to do it. You know, we saved the porn star earlier in the film because she didn't have weapons. You know, Alonzo, she has weapons here, but by the time he gets her, it's just she's unarmed, she's got a baby. So it's to show that there's something more than just a mindless killing machine.
It's just so contrived because this has never been teased or alluded to whatsoever. In a movie that's already gone this far with the violence, this is where you show restraint.
Are we supposed to think that this is Bill Paxton's kid? Because,
or is this a reference to the Dream Child? Where...
Guys, is this Bill Paxton's kid? Whose kid is this?
It hasn't been 9 months. There's no fucking way.
Yeah. Mike investigates the train, and he's told that they found Jerry's badge. Mike then goes and punches out Tim Pope and then drives to investigate. So we then see both the coolest and biggest what-the-fuck moment I've probably ever seen in a movie. Lightning strikes as the Predator's holding his spear, and he couldn't be happier being covered in force lightning.
Yeah, and if you look to the left, Gozer the Gozerian was standing in the building next door.
It's an amazing image.
It is. It made all the posters. I was excited when I saw this image on the posters leading up to this.
So I'll give it that. For all the crap that you could throw at this film, they could at least shoot a hell of a image on a soundstage.
I even wrote in my review on Adventure Amigos when we were reviewing this series. This is back when I wrote reviews. I said that this pretty much defines my thoughts on this movie, where it's a really cool image, but I don't know what the fuck it came from. Mike finds the slaughterhouse, and Keyes gives the lowdown of what happened last film and that they're dealing with a fucking alien who kills for sport. This is what this movie's been building to, right, guys? I mean, this is a scene, pretty famous scene, and you know what? We've gone through a lot of sludge to get here, but I enjoy this stuff in the slaughterhouse.
I want this done better, but the film up until this point also doesn't deserve it to be done better. I want this reveal of Keyes not to be a bad guy villain, you know, which is hard to do with Gary Busey, you know, especially coming out of Lethal, because it's hard to ignore the Lethal Weapon parallels, you know. But let's remember, this is Busey's first role after his traumatic brain injury. So I don't think he's gone complete. I don't want to be mean, but, you know, he's gone a little nutty in the years and decades since. But I do think you could have something really cool realizing that these aren't bad guys. They're trying to follow up on Dutch's mission. They were a part of sending them out there. They were a part of those advisors that got them sent into the jungle. Like, there is some thoughtful and cool shit to be done, but they don't do it well enough. It's surface, and all it is giving you enough to get into this slaughterhouse. And we don't just rip off it, we rip off the sounds. Like, as soon as we start getting the beeping of the fucking detector, you know what we got going on.
Yeah, this is complete Aliens. We reviewed this
last. Yeah, I was gonna say, if you want to watch the better version of this, just watch Aliens.
This is Ripley in the truck watching on monitors as shit's going down.
But I do like that we, and everybody, assumes that the Predator only has one vision. That's all we've ever known at this point. So I like that this also, not just the weaponry has been upgraded, but we're learning more about our titular character.
I think this is dumb that now the Predator realizes, it's cold. So obviously he's got Admiral Akbar on the communicator and his helmet, because now he knows, it's a trap.
Admiral Akbar.
Although this movie is so schlocky, it's Admiral Hackbar.
You bring up Dutch. Would this have been better if Arnold was in the Gary Busey role here?
No, because it would have been, I don't want interconnectedness with this franchise, and they would have just killed him off. So I'm like, he got killed by an inferior Predator.
Yeah, his fee for a cameo would have been more than the entire rest of this movie combined. Yes. And if you would have got Anna back. I don't know. Unless she, like, the only way you could have done it was, would have been to have Carl Weathers survive and have him come back. You know, the rest of it just wouldn't make sense.
And Arnold would not have come back to be killed.
Key says that he's waited a lifetime for this, and he's not going to miss the chance to trap him. He says that they've prepared a trap, and you know that this is going to go well. Keyes tells Mike to grab a seat and enjoy the show as we cut to the task force entering the Predator's whereabouts. They turn on the ultraviolet units as the team investigates, and we're seeing it from their point of view, and of course the Predator has this all figured out and takes all of them out. So like a lot of this movie, it doesn't make much sense, but man, is it cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, it gives a different vision. It's not shot horribly well. I'm not going to say it's shot good, you know, because when we saw it done before, it was done by a master of the craft, but it's an effective scene for this film.
But did we have to see the glaive go through like six fucking sheep before it hits or cows?
Yeah.
Harrigan is in the midst of trying to warn the task force. I always like a good Predator spearing of somebody, which we get here. There's some good stuff going on. Harrigan grabs a gun as Keyes is quite literally blown up.
It's literally all his weapons come to play. Yeah. So everything that we've seen little by little, he uses every single one of them. But Keyes, I complained last week. I'm going to complain again. The random people that can take the full shot to the chest and survive, as opposed to the people that get eviscerated with a shot to the chest, is just for convenience. And it pisses me off.
There's also a huge editing mistake here that has driven me crazy ever since I first saw this movie. He's bisected by the glaive, but you never see the top half of his body hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it go?
Harrigan gets in a bit of a gunfight with the Predator until a little game of cat and mouse ensues, and Hopkins slows the film down as Mike shoots the Predator down. He approaches it and is in the middle of repeating Arnold's line of "you're one ugly motherfucker" from last week, but the Predator stops him and finishes it for him before throwing him down. Of course, we got to get this "you're one ugly motherfucker" lineup.
That's I hate this. I'm all for wink winks and nods, but not in a movie like this where you're really trying to be your own thing. You've had to compromise. You say no to Arnold, although he probably said no to you, but you still feel the need to shoehorn lines like that.
So Predator then gets up and walks towards Mike a bit before Key shows up and starts spraying nitrogen. He tells Harrigan that this is between him and the Predator. As I mentioned earlier, the disc is thrown through four cow corpses until it finally reaches Keyes.
What happened to Buzzsaw? He had to split.
Mike walks around with a gun until a dove interrupts him. Hey, we already saw
it. Oh, I thought John Woo was going
to
come out.
I was just about ready to say, we already had this year. And from here, the movie kind of turns into a bit of a mess because we have another little game of cat and mouse, which is ensuing as the Predator is covered in his own blood. Mike takes a tumble off a building, and then he tells the pussy face that it's his move as the Predator says shit happens. And once again, we bring out the old trusted nuclear bomb in his arm.
Oh, now this thing becomes a Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner chase thing, right down to stupid gags.
I hate this. I hate this film from this moment on, except for one little instant. I find the rest of this movie just to be just poorly written and just a matter of convenience. So Mike grabs the disc and slices the arm off as the Predator falls, which fucking Kevin Peter Hall took this fall, by the way. And goddamn,
it's not just the fall. It's the fact that he has to springboard.
Yes.
And fall back through the window on the other side.
He breaks a mirror and cauterizes the wound using some new equipment that we haven't seen before with this disc that opens up and we have this blue liquid. But of course, we also have some bumbling old people / Jeopardy humor here as the Predator is healing himself in their bathroom. Gag. Oh my God. But I did like seeing this. Adam, you mentioned we see a lot of new gadgets. This blue freaking healing stuff is kind of cool, isn't it?
So this part here, and it was like when I was younger and the first while, I'm like, this is kind of cool. He's got a thing to heal himself. I like seeing this, that he can just grab sheetrock and glass and bits of concrete and just, I guess, melt whatever's at hand. Makes no sense. But I do like that he's got some kind of medical kit, though half those devices look like things that you have in a modern day medical kit. But the dude is just standing here with his back to an open fucking hole in the wall, mm-hmm. while Harrigan is just crawling down this pipe. Like, no sense of space, no sense of I need to go hide to do this. But it's cool to see this get done, to smear it on himself. You know, it's something different. You know, and we've seen the weapons. Now we see some type of healing cream that he creates. And I like at least we're getting something different where somebody had to write something to be like, hey, what if he's got to heal himself? Sure, why not?
Yeah, he's got his own version of like Vaseline.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this is, I mean, we've seen it this entire movie, but Mike is proven to be another one of those characters who just vocalizes everything he does, whether someone is there or not, which is always like my least favorite kind of character. And we cut to Mike just climbing this pole on the outside of the building, and the woman tells Mike that she doesn't think the Predator gives a shit that he's a cop. And
poor old lady.
I hate this fucking humor, though. It's dumb.
It's funny because this is almost like when we get to the slaughterhouse, it is almost the exact halfway part to the movie. And it feels like the first half is three quarters to like 90% of the film.
Yeah.
Because it feels like we get to the end really fast at this point, but it's almost the same length of time.
Yeah. The act breaks on this are weird.
Yeah.
Mike falls, yes, falls, right into the ship, which is located underground for reasons, I guess.
Yeah, plot convenience.
Why? So they're going through this apartment building. They're, I mean, one, it's kind of cool seeing the Predator knock through walls and do all.
Yeah.
He's Captain America, you know, running through the walls and shit from Winter Soldier. But they're going back and forth. And then, I mean, you're not too well hidden if you're just at the bottom of an elevator shaft. And this elevator shaft opens up to Gotham City would be proud of the sewer system underneath L.A.
Yeah, like the Ninja Turtles don't have this easy of transportation.
You know what? We're giving this a hard time for reasons that it's poorly written. But I do like the design of this ship. And we'll talk about what's contained on this wall here in a sec. But the look of the inside of this ship, you can tell a lot of work and thought was put into it. If not the reason of why the fuck Mike is here to begin with, the look of this is pretty cool.
12 years old, seeing him fall into the ship that we had never seen before, other than a quick glimpse at the beginning of the first film, and that's a blink if you miss a moment, that you're suddenly realizing that there's a ship on Earth of this Predator, and at this point we think there's just one. This is fucking cool. It's awesome. I like the design. Doesn't make any sense that we got, you know, Pink Floyd's smoke machine showing up here at the bottom. Nope. I don't care. I like the hieroglyph looks. I like the lighting design they do. There's more effort put into this ship design than the rest of this film. And I think it's fucking cool. I like it. This is the type of thing that pops me when we look at it. Things I like about the character.
Definitely more work put into the design than the script.
This looks like I'm going to quote another 90s B movie. This looks like at the end of Wishmaster when she goes inside the gem and it's like where the djinn's like throne room is. It looks exactly like that.
So the Predator is going around this ship, and I remember sitting with my friend. We were watching this, and my childhood friend Tyler. We're watching this, and Tyler kind of looks at me and goes, "Hey, what's that on that wall?" And it's a blink if you miss it, but there it is. We have that xenomorph head right there, and God, was that fucking exciting. Oh my God. It was one of those Easter eggs that's pre-internet, so we were just ecstatic to tell everybody what we had just seen, and it was cool to think about what could come. What came later? Well, we reviewed that a few years ago. Go back and listen to that. But Adam, in theaters, this was pretty badass, wasn't it?
So exciting. So rad. Dark Horse had just come out, I think, with AVP comics at the time. And you want to see this in this universe. Mm-hmm. So I love this wall. I mean, there's a T-Rex skull. But I want that movie. You know what? We're going to deal with a movie here pretty soon that's got different time frames and an animated style. Let me see the Predator show up in fucking caveman times fighting dinosaurs.
You know what? So many people take credit for this that it almost feels like the Indianapolis speech in Jaws. Hopkins takes credit saying it was his idea, but Stan Winston also said it was his. And then you have the writers who say, yeah, we mentioned it in our script too. I don't know why people are going to want to take credit for this because of what came as a result of it, but everybody wants to take...
I was going to say, if they're going to take the credit for its inclusion, they should take the blame.
Exactly.
for what came, I lean towards Stan Winston because he's the creature designer, mm-hmm. and you know he did Aliens. I mean, look, he just aped off what H.R. Giger had conceptualized, but still, I lean towards him. But you think if anyone would be clamoring, it should be James Cameron going, well, technically, I came up with the mandibles for the Predator, so I should get credit for everything.
Exactly. So Harrigan gets caught in this net, which throws him against a wall as he gets punched and scratched until he grabs a disc and fights back. But he's exhausted and just falls as the Predator shows some restraint. And it is Mike who jams a disc right into his gut, saying that shit happens as the creature just falls at his feet. So Harrigan is successful.
That was easy.
Yeah. Why didn't Arnold do this?
Yeah, if I was Arnold, I'd be watching this going, bullshit!
He walks around the creature for a bit with this blood-covered disc as other Predators surround him, which I guess these guys were L.A. Lakers, who Danny Glover knew because he was a huge Laker fan, and Hopkins was like, we need tall people for this scene, so Glover called some of his Laker friends, and here they are in Predator suits. Pretty cool gig. Harrigan looks around, and I love this fake show of confidence Mike shows, where he's just like, okay, who's next? But we see a Predator give him an ancient gun as the Predator tells him to take it. Okay. Adam, did this have any other meaning in the comic? Did they work this into a plot? What's going on with this gun here?
They may have since that I don't know of, but from what I understand, this was the first time, and it was just to show they've been here before, they'll be here again. It's amazing that it took decades to start replaying this back. Go back and listen to our Prey, dear. Mm-hmm. Retrospective. And stay tuned for an upcoming film, maybe. Maybe Badlands will go into it. But I think it was just to show they've been here since at least the revolutionary times. Which, I don't like what they've done with this fucking gun since. But at this point, it was just one of those... It's kind of like the Skulls, you know, in that trophy case. It was like, oh, shit.
The ship starts rumbling as Mike scrambles to leave. Why not just go with them at this point?
Yeah, I thought this was going to be like Close Encounters. Yeah, where he just leaves with the Predator.
He jumps out as the ship takes off amongst the shadows, and then we cut to Mike waking up in some sand as he stands up against some graffiti. He walks a bit as a helicopter approaches, so we're ending it a lot like we ended last week's film. He's asked what
happened. We're lucky Dutch didn't walk out of this helicopter.
Right. He's asked what happened as he looks at the other officer. He holds the gun given to him as he says, "Don't worry, asshole, you'll get another chance," as the helicopter takes off and credits roll on Predator 2.
I think the fact that Predator gets beaten so easily, I know they try to contrive ways. Oh, he's literally disarmed partially. He ran away, but he took out dozens of guys, whether they were drug dealers or the whole special ops team that Gary Busey's leading. But no, middle-aged Danny Glover can beat him just because he got a hold of his glaive. I find that comical and pretty anticlimactic.
Nah, I don't have the issue with it, just because that weapon was set up as something that was so sliced through, as you said, at 6 months. You know, I'm okay with it. I mean, he was down, he was out, but these predators got to learn to stop playing with your food.
All right, boys, that is Predator 2 on a scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Predator 2? Adam, go ahead, sir.
This was, as a young preteen, one of the most anticipated things I could have gone to see. You know, my father, loved him, but he took me to see 2010 in a movie theater. You know, so my sci-fi kind of went all over the place. So this, that itch of a badass, R-rated, cuss-laden, nudity action film. This movie is such a product of its time. It's a little ridiculous, though. And it has aged probably, definitely worse than any film in this series. But it's aged really bad, even compared to its 80s and 90s compatriots. Look, there's a lot of thought of what they could have done. And at the end of the day, all they did was rip off a comic book that was done much better. They rushed it into production, and the result of it is a movie that is so much less than what came before that it destroyed this franchise for a very, very long time. I can't say it enough. Thank goodness to Dark Horse Comics for keeping the legacy of the Predator alive for decades until we got better films. Because this thing, other than the Predator weaponry and, you know, some cool images, this thing is a really big letdown. It's pulpy almost. It's slop. You can enjoy it in its way. And I do enjoy it. It's type of, in a RoboCop 2 type of sense. But I can't say it's a good film. It's got some cool moments, but it is caricatures throughout. There's not a single character in this movie. It hits the alien ripoff so much that James Cameron should send a Terminator into this film to assault everybody who wrote it and worked on it. At the end of the day, it is the forgotten Predator film because it's the one that does the most damage. And that's a shame. At the same time, I can't say it's worse than something like AVPR. I'm not even going to say it's the worst Predator sequel, because I know some of what we have to discuss. So at the end of the day, I think I've said that 4 times, I apologize. But when I'm done watching this, I'm going to quote the movie to give my synopsis of this movie. Shit happens. And I think that's what they went into production with. And I wish they would have done a little bit more. But I'm going to give it a 5. It's not horrible, but it is such a dramatic step down from the iconic film that is Predator that it deserves better. So 5 on 10 for Predator 2. Shit happens.
Well, Dark Horse kept it afloat until we got The Predator, right, Adam?
Yeah.
Predators.
No, Predators, The Predator, yeah. Because he said until we got better mood. Never mind. All right, Matt. Go ahead, sir. What's your score?
It's impossible to review this movie with a clear vision without having the giant cloud of its predecessor hanging over you. But that's also the assignment you voluntarily take upon yourself when you make it in the first place. I'll give Hopkins a certain amount of credit. I think he does do some pretty cool stuff with how the Predator moves and interacts. And I like a lot of the ideas here. There's a lot that this movie leaves for you to chew on with possibilities, but it all comes down to the script, which is full of more holes than the squib count in this entire movie. I think you could tell this was written in as short of a time as it was, because so much of this is unexplored and leaves the most interesting stuff off to the side in favor of, I don't want to call it rote action, but nothing I think is up to the quality of first one or even similar films in this ilk. The Predator's here. It's a showcase vehicle for him, but I kind of don't like how he has the floor cut out from underneath him by the end of this. It's kind of disheartening. I give Danny Glover credit for trying, but I don't think the Thomas siblings gave him much to work with, and it descends into some inconsistencies throughout that drive me crazy. And I think a lot of the humor that's pushed into this for the back third feels really out of place, because I don't feel like this movie has a very strong identity. But I also don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And I do have to give it a bit of credit for not just doing the same movie again. But I wish what was here was a lot more fleshed out, pardon the pun, than what's here. Because it's not a short movie, you know, it's 1:40. And we saw, like, the first RoboCop, they crammed a lot of stuff, including satire and a lot of pieces into that movie. And here, it's just kind of there. I also don't think it's as awful as its reputation would lead you to believe. But by the same token, I'm not going to be one of those people that calls it underrated or champions it. I just think it could have been a lot better. 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. God, I hate when this fucking happens, because I have the same exact score written down as you do.
No.
Yeah, I do. When we reviewed Alien last year, we talked about the fact that James Cameron took a sequel to a very well-received film and made it his own thing. At this point in Predator, you have the same writers returning, and you have a director for hire, which is what Hopkins is. And he will be the first to tell you that he was brought on, like Nightmare on Elm Street 5, he was brought on to a troubled production that didn't have anything really going for it, and was told to, okay, point and shoot and get it done. Which he does. And I gotta give him style points too. There are some things in this movie that I do like. However, this script is a fucking mess. It needed at least 2 more drafts. And you also, as good as Hopkins is at the style, you don't have the geography that McTiernan brought last week to establish exactly what's going on in this city. Because at one end, we have Colombian drug lords. On the other end, we have Jamaican drug lords. On another end, we have voodoo. And none of it gels. And that's my big problem with this movie, is none of it gels. I would get in discussions with Brandon about this all the time, where I would tell him, dude, it is such a mean-spirited movie with no point. And he's like, no, that is the point. If I wanted to watch that for 90 minutes, I'd go outside the LA street. I think I've kind of warmed on it. Like, when I saw it in theaters, it was like the coolest thing ever. And then as time has gone on, I've soured on it. This, I was more on the positive end just because of how Hopkins shoots this thing. But Danny Glover is not an action lead. And the Predator, Kevin Peter Hall, is doing all he can. But there's no real reason or point of him being here. So I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I do see things I enjoy about it. I see more things I enjoy each subsequent time I've watched it. But man, this is a mean way to spend 1:40. And when you just take a plot point like a fucking female in the police force and show that she's pregnant and then just write her out of the fucking movie, there are problems. And this movie is a big problem in that this fucking thing just was not fleshed out. So 5 out of 10 for me as well. Guys, this was not a flop, but it did not make enough to warrant a sequel. We had a ton of comics, and we already reviewed Alien vs. Predator. We reviewed those two films. People, go back in the archives, check those out. But we didn't get a full-on Predator movie until 20 years later, when Robert Rodriguez fleshed out his idea that he had in the 90s and brought Predators to the screen in 2010. Adam, what are you expecting when we discuss Predators next week, sir?
I think this is going to be the first movie in this series, in this run, that we fight. I got a feeling this one's going to be fighty, fighty. To tease my hand, I knew of this movie. I was really excited because Robert Rodriguez was directing it. And this was one of the only movies that I have ever made a point of not watching any of the lead up information to it. So this was a theater watch that I got to see virginal with no trailers or nothing. And that's what my experience was. But I think this is going to be where we start to pull out the weapons on ourselves.
By the way, Rodriguez did not direct it. He got someone
produced it.
All right, Matt, what are you thinking about next week's show?
Well, having seen before it the two Alien vs. Predator movies, I said, well, there's nowhere to go but up. So there's not a particularly high bar that has to be crossed for it to be better than those. My anticipation was minimal, and I was annoyed that Robert Rodriguez was spearheading it, pardon the pun, but he couldn't direct the damn thing himself. I'm like, really? You hand it off to someone that... Nimrod, Atali's made some stuff I've liked, but if you're that involved, why aren't you just helming it entirely? Especially how quick you shoot your movies.
Yeah.
That you couldn't find the time to do a Predator movie, which I know a lot of people would jump at the chance to do, doing the first true one in 20 years. And I thought, oh, you're just remaking the first Predator again. And when I see the title Predators, I'm like, okay, it's clear you're trying to reference Aliens to some degree. But that's a tall task to live up to, especially in my estimation. So I wasn't excited. And when I saw fucking Adrian Brody was going to be the lead, I went, who is the casting director? Because they need to be fired. In what universe is this guy a believable action star? But he's a great actor, and I thought he could prove me wrong. So I went in with little to no expectations.
Yeah, the same could be said of Danny Glover in this film. What are you doing bringing this respected Oscar-winning actor to this film? Well, Danny Glover was an Oscar-nominated actor, but... Yeah, my expectations were very high, but then the closer it got to release, I'm like Matt, the marketing just made me kind of sour on it by the time I finally got to the theaters to see it. And this is the one I've revisited the least, honestly. I haven't gone back to this since Matt and I reviewed this series way back when in Another Life. So that should be an interesting discussion. And if Adam is on the end, I think he is, and yeah, I think next week we will clash. But until next week, oh, before I get to that, I do want to mention that we have a new member of our staff. We brought him on this week, Mr. David Main. It's insane that we are working with him yet again, but he is handling our behind-the-scenes issues and everything going on with the site. And if we have any redesign issues, we go to him. Adam, can you believe we are working with David Main again?
What was old is what is new again. It's amazing how things go.
And he reached out to me. He was like, what do you need? And we've had some issues going on with the behind the scenes things, and he has taken the ball and run with it. And I couldn't be happier. And who knows, maybe he'll get a show. He's working on yet another book. We might do a podcast discussing that. But I am happy to welcome Dave Main to this site. I am excited to see what he comes up with. But until next week, when we get to Predators, finally, grab a seat, enjoy the podcast. This is history. Thank you, boys.
Why do you call it the Predator?
It's a nickname. You know, the data suggests that it tracks its prey, exploits weakness, seems to, well, enjoy it. Like a game.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Please do not touch anything.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I'm sorry.
We're not dead yet.
What the hell are you?
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net. as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Mad Max film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I wouldn't wish that on a broke dick dog.
Instead of complaining, maybe I should help.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Do you think you could have found something bigger?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Hey, you know what? Fuck this. This is bullshit, man. I want a gun.
Scheduling done by Matt.
This shit's something. Makes Cambodia look like Kansas.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What the fuck?
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
My men are not expendable.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus, just like me.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Billy! Billy! The other day, I was going down to my girlfriend. I said to her, "Jeez, you got a big pussy. Jeez, you got a big pussy." She said, "Why did you say that twice?" I said, "I didn't." See, it's because of the echo.
Okay.
Oh, shoot. They're playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles today.
I know they are. Yeah, for the
35th anniversary. Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Oh, that's time. Freaking go see my Raph in a trench coat. My
horrible movie that is.
That movie is awesome. That's my April O'Neil right there. That movie's awesome.
She's something. That? She's out on that con circuit, man. You can't go to a con without running into her.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Bring her some pizza.
Yeah, just don't get Domino's like that. That's like Italians going to Olive Garden for Friday night.
And this may be fresh in mind because I just watched it on TV the other day and I'm ashamed of myself. It is one earthquake away from Escape from LA.
Oh, shit. Why did you watch Escape from LA again?
I wanted to torture myself, I guess.
I haven't watched that since you and I saw it in theaters.
And it hurt.
Yeah, it's not good, but there's two good things about it. Kurt Russell, like, they don't ruin Snake Plissken. Like, he's still that guy. And also, unlike Escape from New York, it actually takes advantage of taking place in Los Angeles. Like, it actually feels they're exploring a post-apocalyptic LA, but yeah, that movie sucks. I do like the misdirect, though, with the opening of this.
That was kind of nice.
Well, they find new ways to shoot.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Adam, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. So they keep...
Part of the problem is that first Predator movie gets so many kills and so much direction right that it's hard to do something different without aping it.
He also did a really bad movie called Blown Away.
Oh, that's a horrible film. Another one I saw in theaters.
Where... Tommy Lee Jones tries to do an Irish accent,
and it
sounds like people who lived in Boston for a week and think they're Irish because they went to Fenway Park.
I went to that because it was hyped up, and I was so excited to see it.
It was Jeff Bridges and Tommy Lee Jones, who were two, that's two big, I'd see that movie.
I was so excited, and boy, did me and my friend walked up, we're like, what the hell? We then see Mike.
I think this is dumb that now the Predator realizes, oh, it's cold, so obviously he's got Admiral Akbar on the communicator and his helmet, because now he knows, oh, it's a trap.
Admiral Akbar. I love the image of Predator.
Although this movie's so schlocky, it's Admiral Hackbar.
I'm sorry. Jesus Christ, Matt. You floor me sometimes.
Well, between that and Dutch angles, I'm happy by Jesus. when I put that in my notes, I was like, these guys are going to fucking hate me.
You bring up Dutch.